Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in Matthew 17 on our journey through the Word. Everyone loves a great cliffhanger. Well, the chapter before, Jesus gave us the cliffhanger of all cliffhangers. He actually said, "Many standing here will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in His kingdom." Well, chapter 17 is where that actually comes to pass. So let's jump into verse 1 and watch it unfold. After 6 days, Jesus took with Him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There He was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and His clothes became as white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. This is who Jesus really is. His flesh is a veil, His humanity like the burning bush that contained fire that Moses saw, yet did not burn. And here, Jesus' last words of chapter 16 are fulfilled. But why are Moses and Elijah here? Well, we're not told, but it's most likely about His coming death. Both of these men were integral to the Old Testament, Moses representing the law and Elijah representing the prophets. Both of them had prophecies concerning Jesus, and Jesus was about to fulfill everything these two had communicated in the flesh. In other words, Jesus is about to die. He's about to fulfill almost everything that Moses wrote about regarding temple worship. And He was going to fulfill the heart's desire of the prophets, that one would come, the liberator, the Messiah, who would restore true worship back to Israel. Well, it's hard to say whether He's receiving encouragement from them or if they're asking Him questions in all of who He is and what He's about to do. Let's add it to our list of things to ask Jesus about when we get to heaven. Let's continue with verse 4. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. If You wish, I will put up 3 shelters, one for You, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." This is one of those occasions where, probably like we would have been, Peter doesn't quite know what to say. But being Peter, that doesn't stop him from talking. It's kind of funny, really. Here are Moses and Elijah, the two greatest prophets of the Old Testament, supernaturally standing there, speaking with Jesus, in awe of Jesus as He radiates glory brighter than that of the sun. And Peter's thought is,
Lord, I'll build some tents.
While He was still speaking, verse 5, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is My Son, whom I love. With Him I am well pleased. Listen to Him." That's a polite way of communicating a divine shush, Peter. When the disciples heard this, verse 6, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," He said. "Don't be afraid." When they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The disciples asked Him, "Why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first?" Jesus replied, "To be sure Elijah comes and will restore all things, but I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize Him, but have done to Him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands." Then the disciples understood that He was talking to them about John the Baptist. Walking down the mountain, they get into a theological conversation about Elijah. Elijah seems to be alive still, but John the Baptist was the Elijah to come? He came in the power and spirit of Elijah, according to Jesus in one of the earlier chapters of Matthew. And Elijah was a lone voice in the time of corrupt Israel, calling his nation back to God, and John the Baptist also was a lone voice, prepping an entire people to prepare themselves to meet their Messiah. Similar mission, same dress of camel's hair, and an identical diet of locusts and wild honey. Looking back, it's kind of hard to see how anyone missed it. But that's the funny thing. They're walking around with the Ancient of Days as he ate, slept, and went to the bathroom just like anyone else. That was the least of the things that they were missing. Who Jesus is still hitting them as they're walking down the hill. But then they get to the bottom of the mountain and a crowd is dutifully waiting for Jesus in verse 14. When they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. "Lord, have mercy on my son," he said. "He has seizures and is suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him." "You unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me." Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed at that moment. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "Because you have so little faith. Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Be moved from here to there,' and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." Man, the false teachers love to have a heyday with this one. They love to say that people didn't have enough faith when a miracle isn't performed. That's not always the case. This passage actually seems to be saying the opposite. It's true, having enough faith is a big deal. But Jesus says you just need the faith of a mustard seed. It was as if the apostles didn't have any faith at all. You see, a mustard seed is teeny. You can barely see it on your finger. It's not the size of your faith that matters. It's who your faith is in. A big God can handle a mustard seed amount of faith. Faith isn't some power you wield, by the way, like the false teacher said. It's trust in a person, and that person is a very big God. Just a little faith in that big God is all it takes for him to do very big things. Well, moving on, they arrive in Capernaum after Jesus tells them that he's going to soon die. Two things are certainties in life: death and taxes. And in verse 24, the temple taxmen come collecting. After Jesus and his disciples arrived in Capernaum, the collectors of the 2 drachma temple tax came to Peter and asked, "Doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax?" "Yes, he does," he replied. When Peter came into the house, Jesus was the first to speak. "What do you think, Simon?" he asked. "From whom do the kings of the earth collect duty and taxes? From their own children or from others?" "From others," Peter answered. "Then the children are exempt," Jesus said to him. I can almost picture Jesus smiling here. It's a joke that I have to pay this, but Jesus is happy to pay. After Peter fronts with the tax man and says, of course he pays, he had a duty to go in and tell Jesus. But Jesus cuts in first and starts the conversation. Once he makes his point about the ridiculousness of him having to pay, in verse 27 he says, "But so that we may not cause offense, go to the lake and throw out your line. Take the first fish you catch, open its mouth, and you will find a 4 drachma coin. Take it and give it to them for my tax and yours." I love that Jesus sends Peter to do what he's good at here, catch fish. And here Peter is part of a miracle yet again. But what a contrast between Jesus radiating glory like the sun and humbly paying his taxes. But this is the divine mystery of the incarnation, is it not? Jesus is fully man and yet fully God. We see the bush, but it's not burnt up. We see the fire of him being God burning bright through his humanity. With Jesus, the ground we stand on is holy ground. And like Moses, who appeared in this chapter, we take off our shoes to him and worship and honor, not just for his majesty, but also for his humility. Like God promised Moses, he was going to set his people free, not from taxes, but something worse, death. the other surety, and with it, set them free from sin and hell. And that was going to take a whole heck of a lot more of humility from the Ancient of Days.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.